Welcome to Filmstrip. These podcasts are spoiler-filled as we discuss the plots, characters, and themes of the films in review. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504, C2, Title 17.
Welcome to Filmstrip. I'm Jay.
And I'm really confused, otherwise known as Nick.
And we're here to talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Next Generation, or The Return of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
There's alternate titles.
That's the one I saw. We'll talk about it as we get there. Starring Renee Zellweger, Matthew McConaughey. Yes, those people in this movie, believe it or not.
All right.
Yeah. Robert Jacks, Tony Perensky, Lisa Marie Neumeier, John Stevens, John Harrison, Tyler Cohn, James Gale, and Deborah Marshall, and Marilyn Burns and Paul Pretend, and John Dugan, and some cameos at the end, blink and you miss them kind of things. Directed by Kim Hinkle, original writer on the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre, released in 1995, but shot well before then, and a couple of other times on a $600,000 budget. And it grossed about 180 grand at the box office. It didn't really have a box office. This was a direct-to-video.
Is this the lowest box office that we've done for a movie that's actually been in the theaters?
Nope. That is after last season that made $35 on a $5 million budget. But, yeah.
Seven of which were your dollars.
No, I did not see it in a theater. I bought a DVD. So, so I'm part of the $20 after the fact, I guess. But yeah, this one, well, there's a lot here to get into, Nick. And I have to say, I've only ever seen this once before. And it was, again, through the fawn of these that I did many moons ago. Had you had any previous iteration with Texas Chainsaw Next Generation?
Kind of. It's one of these movies where I saw little, like one, like 5-10 minute scene once where it always goes back to those HBO previews. I bring those up a lot, and I think that's just what it was. I think sometime in the 90s, we had a free HBO weekend, and this was one that would just happen to be on, you know, when I decided to sleep downstairs at like 1 a.m, hoping to find some like Skinamax type stuff to watch, and this happened to be on. And I think I remember watching like 5-10 minutes of this, and it was like the dinner scene.
Yeah.
And just being like, what the hell is this? And that's all I remember.
Yeah, this one, well, you know, we talked about the third one, that there was nothing memorable about it. That cannot be said of this movie if you've ever actually peeped it, because it is a tour de force of insanity on screen, and it's got a root from the origin again. You've got the original writer back to direct it. And I don't know this about Kim Hinkle. I didn't see it in any of the behind the scenes stuff, but I can only imagine this guy spent years just smoking weed, listening to Art Bell on Coast to Coast AM. Cause that has as much influence on this movie as anything else does.
Is Art Bell still alive?
I don't think so. George Norrie still is.
Oh my God. My grandpa used to listen to him all the time and tell me the stories the next day about, like, you know, aliens the size of raisins that are camped out in Kansas or something like that.
The lizard people, all that stuff. Yeah,
more innocent times.
I mean, right? But before the dark times. But yeah, this movie is just a really interesting twist on it. And I love how we're going to open with the same things we always get. We get this opening crawl, but how they set this thing up and what they propose is going on here takes this series in a place that, you know, horror sequels go in some weird places, right? Like Halloween 6 takes that series into a very strange land with all the runes and Paul Rudd and all that shit. And you got a cult of people working in a hospital. And like Friday the 13th, 9, Jason Goes to Hell's got this whole like thing going. You got Freddy's Dead, part 6. You got the sperm demon Freddy's and all that shit. All these movies have gone somewhere, right? That's the whole point. Like some of them start out that way, like Child's Play, Hellraiser, stuff like that.
Are you saying go somewhere as in like every sequel is a little bit more like weird, and then they try, like in one of the later sequels, to try to tie them all together with some weird mythology.
Well, that, or they just take the full left into, you thought it was this, but it's this complete Jackson Pollock fucking mind twist of an idea. It tries to be smarter than it is. It tries to elevate the material by making it incredibly complicated for no reason. That's what this one does.
Okay.
I mean, and it's only notable because really of the two lead stars. The people in this movie went on and still act to this day, have done things for years. But Matthew McConaughey and Renee Zellweger did this before they were anybody.
Oscar winners, by the way.
Yes. Before they were anybody, they did this, and then all of a sudden they both had huge hits that came out before this movie got released. So it kept getting pushed down and like hidden. And finally it came out, and it came out in a couple of different cuts. I've seen probably the most available one out there. The one that's the colon Next Generation. It's the one you can rent, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I did though scour the dark side of the internet because I had to know what was the difference in the cuts.
I watched this twice.
I saw the Return of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and I can't tell you that there's much difference in them, and there's probably a great website out there that
donate to his GoFundMe.
It's one of these movies though that I realized, I'm like, well, at least this one's shot on location. It's definitely shot in Texas, because I've seen lots of places where they shoot. And they talk about, like, oh, this is exactly where this is outside of Austin and where this is. And you've got a lot of, I think that's a lot of Kim Hinkle. He wanted to have that to go with it. But this movie, as it got recut and repackaged, the push was like, come see these big stars that are in it now. And they're all like, we weren't in that movie. Like, they're definitely Dennis Quaid.
Before they were stars.
They were slumming it in this piece of garbage. But yeah, I mean, everybody starts out in something that they probably wouldn't want to forget. I don't know, nowadays, man, it's probably like
I think Sylvester Stallone did a porno.
Well, that's what they say. I think he's pumped that legend more than anybody, speaking of the pump. But I think nowadays it's like you don't want to watch your old TikTok video that got you.
Yeah, I mean, Arnold was in like some weird, like made for TV, like after school special where he had roid rage. I mean,
yeah. I mean, he was Hercules in New York and all that stuff. So it's, yeah, there's where they dubbed him.
Harrison Ford was a janitor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, yeah, I think it was recently Apocalypse Now popped up on Netflix, and like the freeze screen is Harrison Ford's like 1 second in the movie. And I'm like, that's a tease. Mm-hmm. So somebody's a Star Wars fan.
Are we saying it's kind of like executive decision where they tried to make it look like what's his name?
Steven Seagal.
The Russian sympathizer guy.
Yeah.
Because it could be a Steven Seagal joint. Like, that ever meant anything. And it's like, well, now he dies about 20 minutes in.
Yeah, spoiler alert for executive decision. But yeah, no.
Best decision any movie ever made.
I mean, this movie, a lot of people would agree with you. This movie, though, is, I'm going to do a plot summary, but I'm really not going to do a plot summary. I'm going to tell you, here's what this movie is trying to tell you is going on.
But Jay, let me ask you, did you just take part three's summary and just kind of change around a few things?
No, I'm going to tell you right now, there are no plot summaries up to this point. It's the same plot every damn time. It's a teenage girl.
I said that last time.
It's a teenage girl who somehow runs afoul of these people.
Car ride, accident happens, people die, some dinner scene, a chase at the end. Someone dances with a chainsaw. Credits.
That is exactly it. Every time. That is.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us for this episode.
we got to add the layer cake into this one, because here's the deal. All of that happens. Nick laid it out for you. That's exactly what happens in this movie. It's people going to a prom this time. Jenny and her friends. That's who Renee Zellweger is.
20-some-year-olds going to prom.
That's not the first time that's happened. But anyway. This time, though, they run into the family. And the family is led by Vilmer. That's your Matthew McConaughey character here. And you've got Leatherface. You've got the other people involved, too. But the whole point is, you've even got a real estate agent who keeps really strange hours, who's the girlfriend of Vilmer, who's involved in this. The whole town seems to be involved in this. But what we find out is that it doesn't matter what any of that is. There are federal agents from a shadow X-Files type organization that are keeping the Sawyer family going because it does some sort of population control experiment or some shit. And that's what we find out, because once they're wreaking havoc and causing problems, the guy who looks like Judd Nelson's other brother shows up with an overcoat to tell him to tone it down.
So the government's behind this?
The government's behind this.
Is this how COVID began?
And when they were in the final chase, as Leatherface is going across the field chasing a Winnebago of old people and Denny across the field, a low-flying helicopter comes and decapitates the Vilmer character, and Leatherface is left swinging his chainsaw, crying in the wind. And we go to the hospital and we tell Jenny, sorry, this wasn't really supposed to go down this way, as credits roll. It's all the government's fault, Nick. It's all the government's fault.
It is the government's fault. It's, this podcast AOC. It's just the government's fault. But, I do have something to admit here is that, Jay, this movie does hold a record for me.
What is that?
It's a prestigious record. Most times it's taken me to get through a movie.
How many times? You've been up to three before on a movie. So.
Five.
Five times.
Five times.
Was there a specific part where you kept like losing it?
It was the rooftop chase that got me to fall asleep.
The one from Halloween 4?
That got me to fall asleep twice. The dinner scene got me to fall asleep twice as well, which is, I think, pretty soon after that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one was when they were in the cornfield with the helicopter, like when the FBI agents got there. Like,
yeah.
It took me five times. And maybe it might be six. I don't know. It's, you know, if I fell asleep five times, yeah, then I guess it was six times. So I guess, yeah. My math skills is pretty bad. That's why I'm not an accountant. So it was six times, five times falling asleep for me.
Wow. Wow. And see, I'll go ahead and admit something now. Of all the sequels of these, this is by far the most fun I've had watching one again. Like, and I knew that was going to be that way going in, because I remember when I saw this, I was like, this movie is batshit crazy. But it's kind of fun in that way, because much like the way Viggo Mortensen brought something to that, I don't know what kind of drugs Matthew McConaughey was on in this or anybody else making this thing, but they all clearly just said, we're just going to go for it. And it is balls to the wall nuts the whole time.
I'll agree. As soon as it gets to the halfway point, it goes crazy. The beginning is so mundane. It takes a lot to get through with the whole prom setup.
I think it's because they're trying to make those teenagers characters. And the problem is that Barry, Heather, Jenny, and Sean, none of them are really characters. Even Jenny is not a character.
No one is. And the whole thing I got asked too is like, what's with the mechanical leg aspect? Like, that was never explained.
We're going to get
like,
to that.
Yeah, dude's got a mechanical leg and just whatever.
We'll talk about Matthew McConaughey's remote control mechanical leg as we get.
He's got a
it.
Controller for it.
He's getting multiple controllers apparently, because you know, those things cross over. But no, we got to talk about our couples here though, because Barry and Heather are clearly like the most popular kids in school or whatever. But Barry's the complete jerk of all of them. He's cheating on Heather the whole time. She catches him, but she still takes him back because it's sort of a status thing to be with a guy like him. Whereas her friend Jenny is, I mean, it is a joke the way they play it off, is that Barry talks about, oh, she's not that hot. She's not very pretty. And then Heather's like, I've had gym class with that girl. She's awesome. And it's that whole, like, take the girl's glasses off and, you know, pull her hair back. And all of a sudden she goes from a 4 to a 10, you know, and that's funny. But I think the one big difference between the two cuts that I remember is they do play up a lot more that Jenny is, Renee Zellweger's character, is definitely being harassed by her mom's latest boyfriend, husband, whatever. Because he like almost attacks her in one scene. Did you get that scene when you watched it? Did you see that?
No, I didn't get that scene.
See, okay, I think they cut that from the more wide release version of it. That is something they play up in this, and it's supposed to like give you this sense that Jenny's this much stronger than she looks because she's been abused. But I could see why you would cut that, because it's horrendously done and it's terribly offensive, because it does not necessarily do that. In fact, it probably inflicts a lot more trauma than they even play for here.
You know what? I'm just going to take your word for it.
It's not a necessary part of the
plot.
That's
going to be something I say quite a bit in this.
I'm going to say, you're right about one thing. The setup of this is bad. All right. It's not good. The inciting incident is we get into a wreck in Barry's dad's car. So I felt like I was watching something that would be the prelude to I Know What You Did Last Summer many years later.
License to Drive. Right?
But yeah, all those.
Like, it, you know, like, you know, in the past, you used to all go back to Carnosaur. This is all going back to the Corey Haim and, you know, Feldman classic License to Drive.
We've now referenced that two times in a row. That may have to be on a future list somewhere along the way. But it's all Heather's fault. They have the wreck. And poor Sean is the other boy that's he's not really Jenny's date. He's just kind of along for the ride to smoke weed. Is there with the their unconscious motorist while they're looking for help in the middle of damn nowhere, and they find an office trailer.
Why are they in the middle of nowhere, Jake?
Because they're in the middle of nowhere, Texas. That's the idea.
But if they're going from their house to the prom.
They were leaving the prom, actually. They had been to the prom.
Yeah, but then they're going home or they're going to an after party. Like, we've all left prom. You just don't go driving around in the middle of nowhere. Like, usually
you do if you're from the middle of nowhere, Texas, and it takes a while to get in between.
They gotta have a destination here. Like, you know, it's like.
Look, this was shot in Austin. It was not set in Austin, my friend. This was set like outside Midland or something.
I'm not following the setup, but let's continue. I'll take your word for it.
The point is, we've got to get them out in the sticks, right? And again, I'm going to back up to what the plot is really supposed to be telling you, is that the government is stashing these people everywhere. Because we didn't talk about the opening crawl, that it acknowledges all of these movies. They're all in continuity, and that the government just finds crazy people and they recreate the Sawyer family over and over again because it, I don't know if it's population control, if it's some sort of big sociological experiment they're trying to do. I don't know what they're
not efficient if it's population control, because this is
not only that, but I get the idea. We're gonna pull it way back. We're gonna give this big conspiracy that is not explained in either cut well enough, and that's a problem. Like, if you're gonna have some bullshit excuse for why all this exists, at least have like a scene to tell me what you're talking about. You can't lay that out and then not tell me what.
Well, are we going down the same road as that Joss Whedon one where, what was that movie called? Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, that one.
Where it was all like a conspiracy.
He just produced that, though. He didn't really.
Okay. Yeah. But you still get my point there, where it's all a conspiracy. Like, there's masterminds behind that. And it's like, then go the whole nine yards with it.
Well, they do. That movie, The World Ends. I mean, at least that movie.
No, I'm just saying with this movie.
Oh, yeah, no.
Go the whole nine yards like they did in that movie.
What this is a Monster of the Week episode on X-Files, is what it feels like. Okay. I mean, it's really, if you ever watch the X-Files, like, there's the main continuity ones, and then there's this shit.
I've watched the one X-Files movie, and one X-Files episode where it was like kind of a redone of the thing, where they were like an anarch. That's all.
They're all redoing of the thing.
Yeah, that's all I know from that series.
So. Well, but I'm saying, for anybody listening, that's what and they haven't seen this movie and you're listening to the show, that's what this movie is trying to do, is that sort of X-Files, it's always this big conspiracy thought. That's why I referenced the Coast to Coast AM, because it feels very much like the kind of shit that would be on that at 2 a.m. when you're driving across Arizona or whatever, and you have nothing else to do but let your mind go down that rabbit hole.
Like I said, I'll take your word for it.
Not that I've listened to that at 2 a.m. driving down the middle of the road, but whatever.
It's all making sense.
But yet, again, there is no straight through line. Like, the movie, the beats are there. You laid it out. But the characters are what make this one much more watchable and memorable. The Vilmer character that Matthew McConaughey is doing, again, not only being whatever coked out that he's trying to do or whatever, but they don't explain why he is what he is. He does have this leg with this brace on it that, like, he's constantly having to, like, recharge the batteries for, and he can control with a remote control. They don't tell you why that is. Is he supposed to be the Chop Top reborn? Is he a cyborg? I don't know, but it's hilarious to watch him.
It's just kind of funny when you look at the evolution of that character, because the first one, it would be the hitchhiker.
Right, he is that.
And then you got Chop Top or whatever it is. And the second one, then you got Viggo Mortensen's Tex in part 3, and now you got Robot Leg, all right. Yeah. Kathy McConaughey doing it, and he does say that line in there. So it's... I think it works better if it's actually the same character from that movie.
That he's just that same guy?
Yeah, it's like, you watch, you know...
Probably his cousin or something.
Yeah, you watch that, and it's like, okay.
Dazed and Confused,
Dazed and Confused. You watch Dazed and Confused,
the thing about these Texas Chainsaw movies, they keep getting older, and the plot stays the same.
Pretty much. That's it.
I mean, they really do. But you gotta admit, even if you're falling asleep in this, he is infinitely more fun to watch than anything else in this movie.
Oh yeah, he's chewing the scenery like a good old boy chewing a big wad of freaking grizzly wintergreen. I mean, that definitely is
Levi Garrett, man, on the left cheek. He is funny, and I love the way he comes up. And they're like, hey, is the motorist, is he alive? He said, I don't know. And he just breaks his neck. Like, well, he dead now. You know, it's like, oh, I mean, they're pulling no punches at all. And it's, I mean, the thing though, he pulls up in a tow truck with the words Illuminati painted on the side of it. And I'm like, well, there's text and then there's subtext. And this movie's very much in the text.
Yeah, I would say so. It's, you know, there's subtlety and then there's smashing you over the head with a freaking ball peen hammer. And that's kind of what that is.
Well, to reference into the movie I've already talked about, in Halloween 6, they purport that Michael Myers tries to father a kid with his niece so that he can sacrifice it. Yeah, I mean, yeah. And this movie purports that the Illuminati have this family do these serial killings because it stokes some kind of interesting, like, groundswell of fear in, you know, the American heartland. I don't know. I mean, is this the one they're trying to say all these Texas people, like, carry guns and are, you know, distrusting of the government?
Between this and the Halloween reference, kids, don't ever go to college for screenwriting because this is what it leads you to. It's a waste of money. You're going to be at $90,000 in debt and you're going to be making the Texas Chainsaw Massacre the new beginning. So, or whatever it is. So,
Next Generation.
Yeah, whatever. Sure. I'll take your word.
This is way better than Friday the 13th New Beginning. Come on. So, but no, Vilmer, though, McConaughey, makes this so much fun. And I gotta talk about the Darla character too. They find the office open in the middle of the night, the real estate lady or whatever. And you get old Darla out there and she's all dolled up and she's talking to her. She's also the only person to show actual nudity in these Texas Chainsaw movies. She flashes like these people driving by for no reason whatsoever. And I'm like, I mean, they finally got around the nudity for no reason at all in this, but I guess.
Was that in both cuts? Because I do not remember this.
It is in both cuts. That is one of the notable features. So. Not that it's memorable. I mean, it's not anything.
17-year-old me would go back and try to rewatch that, but I'm good.
Yeah, I don't anticipate you adding this to your voodoo library anytime soon. But not that I didn't even know if you can. But yeah, the point is, she's supposed to help them because they've had this wreck. They've been chased by somebody with a chainsaw. We've already had that. And that's what I wanted to get to is Leatherface in this one is much more like the original Leatherface than any of the two previous iteration sequel parts we've seen. He's back to the full cross-dressing. He's got multiple faces for different moods. And he gets ordered around by his siblings, his brothers, like, don't you, look, he cuts the door in half. I told you not to let him out, you know, and they yell at each other. They get in this whole fight. And I got to tell you, Robert Jacks has a great scene when Heather is sitting on that swing on the porch and he's skulking behind her and he's like petting her hair and smelling it. And she has no idea what's going on. And when she finally stands up and realizes he's there, it's not played for scares. It's played for laughs. And it's hilarious. I laughed so hard at that.
Okay. So, okay. I don't know. It's, I mean, I like this Leatherface more than part 3 and even part 2. It seems to be a little bit more, I don't want to say approachable because none of these characters are approachable, but it's just something that's got a little bit more substance for very much a character that, you know, you wouldn't expect to have very much substance. So it's like, you know, the first one, you could take some things from as far as who this character is, but like part 2 and part 3, it just, we make comments about that. It's just a fat dude. You know what I mean? Running around in a, you know, ill-fitting white shirt, you know, brown leggings, a chainsaw. So this one is, I would say out of the four that we've watched, and you know what? Maybe I'll make this my thing for the series is let's rank the Leatherface. I think, you know, obviously number one is going to be the best.
Yeah, Gunnar Hansen is the best.
Yeah, yeah. He's great at that. Then you got this guy at 4, and then I'd go 2, and then I'd go 3.
Yeah, Robert Jacks has a build more close to, I guess, what Gunnar Hansen's was. But even the way he operates and does things, they realized something that I think the second movie knew, obviously because Tobey Hooper was involved, and Kim Hinkle would know this too, is that the mistake of the third one was to try to center it around him, or at least tell us they were going to center it around him, when that's never been the case. Leatherface has never been the central character of any of this shit.
And he shouldn't be.
No, and this will be a mistake that they continue to make going forward. But it's always the other characters. And there's got to be one that really draws your attention. And they had it with Viggo, and they just gave him a bad movie to do it in. They nail it with McConaughey in this, with Vilmer and the way he operates and how it vacillates back and forth between the other brother who's constantly like spouting off like quotes from, you know who that is? That's Bill Shakespeare right there. You know, and It's sort of the joke of the idea of like, oh, if the Illuminati set these people up, like, you kind of get it. It's like, oh, we found this guy who likes to read a lot, so they just give him every book in the world. He just, that's all he does is read and cut people with straight razors. And then you got Matthew McConaughey, who's got this robotic leg, and he makes a girlfriend out of the local hussy real estate girl. And all this, I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's funny. And then there's a grandpa sitting there, by the way, who looks like he's dead. Like, we think there's a corpse at the dinner scene, but at some point he's like, I'm gonna peace out. He just gets it, walks off, and doesn't ever come back. And I was like, man, this movie is bug nuts hilarious.
And that's the whole thing too, is like, the more interesting part of this too, or I'm not gonna say the more interesting part, let me rephrase that. It's just interesting. It's like the real estate lady. Like, What the hell is with that? Like, just talk about,
she's
like,
part of the conspiracy, man. She's part of the driving people.
What, her and her Ross Dress for Less fashion sense? I don't know. I just, it's just, like I said, it's like they do like the dinner scene, and like she's got this like weird like Kohl's department store style like purple dress on, you know, like prom dress.
Oh, No. By the time she's in the dinner scene, she's wearing a dominatrix outfit, man. She's dressed up like that when she's at her office and when she makes out with McConaughey.
Yeah, it's just weird. It's bizarre. And then her relationship with Matthew McConaughey, because I'm taking it that they're, you know, boyfriend and girlfriend or husband and wife or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a very weird additional character on here, but
she's not additional though, Nick. Hold on. She's the same thing that we've had in all these movies. There's got to be somebody in the town that lures you into the false sense of security that then drags you to the family. She's the cook in the first movie. There's not in the second movie doing that. She's the,
it would make more sense right now with the housing market to have that be a real estate agent, but,
Yeah. But I mean, she's the Vigo in the third movie. That's what she is. She is the mark catcher, and then she drives them to literally to the place. I mean, there's a great scene where after we've hung poor Heather up on a meat hook, and she gets out of it somehow, and she's crawling down the highway, and Darla rolls up on her, and she's like, well, I gotta find something. And she finds a stick, and just, it's like that scene in South Park when Cartman's gonna murder somebody with a wiffle ball bat. I mean, she's hitting her, she's like, stop hitting me with that stick. I mean, it's funny, man.
I don't know, man. There's just so much crazy stuff in this movie. It's hard to, like I said, kind of like, even like going in retrospect after watching this a few days ago, just trying to piece it together, because it is so just like bug nuts fucking crazy.
Well, that's the thing, is there is no piecing it together. That's what I'm trying to tell you, is that this movie doesn't even purport to have a plot. It is the same movie as they've always been. It's the same movie as the first one again. It's just told from but what if the Illuminati were behind all of this? Huzzah! I mean, that's what Kim Hinkle's idea is. And I can't fault him for that, because it is at least better than the last one. That last one is dreck compared. At least this is creative. Tobe Hooper's second one was creative. It didn't execute completely well, but it was fun to watch Dennis Hopper be insane and Stretch run around and all the sexual innuendo of that. Well, they dropped all that now. Matthew McConaughey just says it. It's no longer innuendo. It's just there. And to watch him go and monologue and in his sweatiest, greasiest haired look at all, I ate this up. And him and Renee Zellweger go at each other like nobody's business. I mean, he's like ripping her face here and there, and she's giving it right back to him. She gives a good fight. It's funny, man. And then they blowtorch that one poor girl. Like, I mean, poor Heather gets like murdered like four different times. It's terrible, man, what happens to that poor lady.
It's just funny. Yeah, she's at the dinner scene too, and then they're just like, yeah, we're going to light her on fire.
Yeah.
You know, pretty bad special effects as far as, you know, the fire stuff goes in the fire suit and the stunt double or whatever you want to call it. But it's just another just element of like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, well, I mean, but even the way Barry and her and Heather get caught, Barry gets caught just like the guy in the first movie, gets hit in the head with the damn sledgehammer and thrown into a refrigerator, and then he hangs her on a meat hook. It's the same movie again, but just told from this like psychedelic conspiracy theory twist. And what I would say is that I'm not going to sit here and tell you this movie's great. Okay, it's not. All right, but it is fun to watch if you realize what they're trying to do, which is, I think what Kim Hinkle realizes, that there is nothing else to tell. So let's make the most far-fetched thing we possibly can. And at the end, I'll just drop in three people from the first movie. So it'll be like, oh, are they real people, or are they in on it too? You know, that's what it's supposed to make you think. It's an X-Files episode. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying with the X-Files episode based on the two things that I've seen there, but
right.
Yeah, it's just completely off the wall as far as what they're trying to, I mean, I don't think they're trying to say stuff. I think they're just trying to throw a bunch of shit out there and see what sticks.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem with it, though, is that they throw almost too much shit out there to try to make it stick, because this movie's trying to have all this conspiratorial bullshit backings, but also trying to be horrific while trying to be funny. And it's trying to be three things at once that are diametrically opposed to each other. You can have two of them, but you can never have the third one.
What was your reaction, though, when the FBI agent walks into the house?
Dude, I thought I had fallen asleep, and I woke up and fucking St. Elmo's fire was on. That's what I thought, because that's how the guy is dressed. And I was like, did I switch the channels? Like, I did not see this coming. And the way that he talks, like,
are we gonna have Demi Moore sitting up there with the windows open?
Yes, trying to freak
out. I'm gonna die via cold air.
Right. Might as well have. But I mean, really, he looked like that. And I was like, what? I had to rewind it. And I was like, what is this again? Cause I did not remember all of this. I remembered the mechanical leg and, you know, kind of the very end of this movie. And the two times watching it back for this one, I was like, now what is he saying? Because his setup's the same in both of them. Is, what are you doing? And I love how he chastises Vilmer. And that Vilmer takes it, but he's like, I'm going to get you. I didn't say nothing. You know, like, these are their controllers. And it's, I don't know. I've watched the show like The Americans, you know, and there's always the spies have a controller, right, that strikes fear into them in some way. And I'm like, well, these people really must be scared. The real scary people are the ones in the suits and the calm ones and all this shit, you know? And
well, that's the whole thing. You don't have to be concerned about the cannibal rednecks. You got to be concerned about the guys in the black suit and the dark sunglasses.
I think you've hit on what Kim Hinkle wants you to think, is that it's not the backcountry people where I'm from, in Texas, where he says. It's the suits. It's the government. It's the elite. The Illuminati. They're all after you. Which, again, is some coast-to-coast AM shit.
How topical.
Well, I mean, you know, everything comes around in one way or another. But I mean, really, it I'm like, nowadays, like, this would be a Reddit thread or a 4chan story. Like, it's, you know, this is redonkulous. But
it's a copypasta or whatever you call it.
Yeah, it's one of those, exactly. But I'm, as part of a horror series, I give it credit for really trying to think outside of the box. This series has already done that once. If for something that recycles the same plot over and over again, at least they're presenting the dish differently. Like, it's like if I come to your house and you say, Jay, we're going to have steak and lobster. I'm like, I have an expectation of what that's going to look like the first time. But then the second time you serve it to me, but it's on like a kiddie plate. And I'm supposed to eat it with toothpicks.
No, see, the kiddie play thing is just not, it would be more the equivalent of like having a bunch of midgets with big top hats and then having the steak and lobster all around the brim of it and whatever and being like, yep, there we go. It's the same thing, but look how it's presented.
But then the third one would be like on a picture of my family. And then the fourth one would be like the plastic steak and lobster that used to set on the play settings at like a Sears or whatever.
No. It would be, we're gonna watch.
And you can tell me that's no, what I no, get, because that's what the government
wants
me to.
No, we're gonna watch that one of those fishing shows on Discovery, and just do a bunch of coke.
Well, I mean, I can see that too. Yeah. So.
That happened yesterday.
So. I mean, well, see.
Deadliest catch and a bunch of Colombians' best.
I should have come over yesterday. So, and by Colombians' best, for anybody with actionable items here, we're talking about coffee. But no, the whole secret society bit and stuff, I think the guy's name is Rothman or Rothschild. It doesn't matter. It's funny to me the way that he controls them. But then as soon as he walks out, like, all hell breaks loose again. Like, it's when the movie goes insane. But I love the end fight, too, that Jenny gets the remotes and starts fucking with Vilmer's leg. Like, the fact that she screws him up with that is really funny. And she gets out into the broad daylight and catches the I love the old couple. Like,
did Christopher Nolan get an idea from this for the Dark Knight Rises? I swear to God, it's the same thing.
It feels like it. That and maybe the beginning of Tenet. But I love that Jenny runs up on this RV couple, you know, and they're hilarious, by the way. And Leatherface is trying to cut the damn RV in half, running alongside of it in a truck somehow. But this low-flying plane out of North by Northwest is like, it's not just a crop duster. It's watching over them, and it decides to come down, and it doesn't show it because it got cut out in every version you could find. But it's supposed to decapitate McConaughey. That's the idea, is that he gets his head cut off. And that's why Leatherface, like, has this crying fit in the middle of that cornfield. It's pretty crazy to watch.
Yeah, that's what I got. I got the North by Northwest feel from that, you know, mm-hmm. where the Simpsons did a play on that with Marge and her mom running through the cornfield with the plane behind it. But definitely, I think, you know, that's the inspiration behind that scene as far as that goes. But again, it's like, just imagine the FBI is like, we got to borrow your crop duster. Because, you know, they don't have crop dusters in the FBI, so they had to go to some farmer and be like, you know, Agent Scully, FBI, we need to use your crop duster.
No. I feel it's like Jack Ryan in Clear and Present Danger. Do you take a company credit card? And he puts his CIA card on the guy's desk or whatever. And it's like, yeah, so company check. So, yeah, that's how that went down. Or they probably just shot the guy and stole it. I mean, that's the other way. If you're going to do this, like, what do you care?
You might as well.
I mean, at this point. But what is hilarious is the coda on this, where we've got Jenny in the hospital. And, of course, you've got Franklin wheeling the original Sally by on a gurney. He's just looking over at her, you know, catatonic, because she's supposed to have died in a hospital in the story. And you've got the guy who played Grandpa, who's the policeman, and obviously not in Grandpa makeup, explaining, we're sorry, this was supposed to be a real spiritual experience for you, we understand, because that's what the government has told him. And she's going, but what? Because I think Renee Zellweger is not really sure what the plot is in this movie. Most of the time she looks really confused, and I understand why. Because I don't think she knew exactly what she was in. She was just being fed pages at a time and was like, sure, and just went with it. It doesn't explain anything, but yet explains too much at once.
I'll take your word for it, Jay.
Well, let's see what words you got for the end of it. It's time to get final thoughts, recommendations, and popcorn ratings. So what are yours for Texas Chainsaw Massacre Next Generation?
Small popcorn. I know, this is one of these things where I think you really enjoyed this, but for me, like I said, I can't give it more than a small popcorn, considering I had 5 resets throughout this movie as far as having to rewatch it. Or to, you know, try to, you know, everybody's done that where you fell asleep and you're kind of rewinding it and you're like, I fell asleep here. Like, oh, maybe I woke up here, but I kind of keep going back because I don't remember that scene. Yeah, that was basically me for it. It's a crazy movie. It's one that, I mean, I still don't know what I watched, but here's the thing. I don't want to go back and find out.
Oh.
So to me, small popcorn, this has been just a completely crazy movie. And even though, like, the beginning of this movie, we'll sit there and be like, part 2 and part 3 happened. To me, we have watched one original and then 3 separate sequels to that original movie.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And they have gotten, to me, worse each time. And, you know, you sit there and go, well, is this worse or better than 3? It's just a different bad. You know, it's kind of like, you ever go to a gas station and get sushi? Like, that's bad. That's some bad shit. But also, you know, it's some bad shit when you sit there and you go through your refrigerator and you find some leftovers and then you realize they're 2 weeks old and tomorrow's going to be a really bad day. So it's 2 different bad levels there. I'm really interested to see where this is going. I know next we're getting into the reboot and the Jessica Biel. You know, whatever. Jessica Biel, guest Gene commercial ad, you know, one. But I'm just hoping that it's better than what we've been through for the last 2 movies. And I know in, like, part 2, I sat there and I'm like, ooh, this is not that good of a movie. Man, that looks freaking good right now. So that's where I'm at.
It looks coherent. I'm going to tell you right now, I actually joined you in the rating. It's a small popcorn, but it's like the best kind of small popcorn. I've used this analogy before. As you go to the local high school ball game, and you're like, you know, I'll get some to support the kids, you know, whatever. And you eat the first little bit of it, and you're like, eh. But then you get to the middle of it where they've actually got the good pieces of it. It's like, oh, it's the perfect salty, buttery goodnessness of it. And then you bite down on a kernel, and it almost breaks a tooth, and you're like, ugh. So you throw out the rest of it. That's what this movie is. There's enough here, and particularly it's the Matthew McConaughey part of it, and I also think the overriding idea that they're trying to purport that this is some, you know, stretch of the Illuminati doing all of this, that make this remotely interesting. Because that last movie was boring as hell. Like, there was nothing to remember about it because there wasn't anything in there. This one at least has some fun to it. And I would say that it's not any good, but you can have fun watching this. So it's small popcorn, but like a good small popcorn. So it's not completely awful. It's definitely the so bad it's good. This is not something to watch by yourself like I did twice. Watch this with a group of people that are into the idea of we're going to watch a bad movie with people that we recognize in it, and we're going to have a lot of fun making fun of it.
With a table full of Columbia's Best.
I would coffee. Not recommend that part of it. That might make
I'm talking about coffee. Come on.
You might need it to stay awake, apparently. But yeah. But no, it's small popcorn. Follow the podcast on our social media at FilmstripPod. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You'll find posts from our hosts, mostly Ron running the Twitter these days, and announcements about upcoming shows as well. We are proud members of the Geek Lounge, geeklounge.com. You'll find links to lots of different podcasts, just a group of lots of pod friends. We do a lot of crossovers and stuff like that amongst all the different things there, but we're glad to be a part of that as well. We appreciate you joining us for this ride. Until next time, for Nick, I'm Jay. Thank you for listening to Filmstrip.
All right, all right, all right.
Thank you for listening to Filmstrip. You can find more episodes on our website, filmstrippodcast.com. The Filmstrip theme music is produced and performed by Frozen Lake 121. All content used or discussed in these podcast episodes is the property of the respective owners and used under the Fair Use Act, Section 504, C2, Title 17.